Hello again, everyone, wherever you may be, and welcome to the 166th edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your window on the world of Iowa politics, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. We are glad you're with us. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my longtime partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Welcome, Laura.
Good to be here, Dennis.
Laura, we have much to talk about tonight, about what the state legislature did since our last broadcast. And first, we're going to begin with the biggie, the struggle to find a compromise on one of the governor's big agenda items, reforming the state's area education agencies. This one is complex. We're going to break it down for you. Laura, start out.
This was the issue nobody saw coming because Governor Kim Reynolds came out in January and said that we need to do a complete overhaul of the state's area education agency system, which has been in place for 50 years. It provides services for kids with disabilities, also all kinds of different education and media services for schools. And it has been, like I said, it's been a system that's been in place for a very long time. So the governor's bill fell flat in both chambers, and we've seen a lot of movement. Last week, the Senate passed a very amended version of the House bill. It was closer to what Governor Reynolds wanted. It would allow school districts to have much more control over the money that they receive for special education. And most of that money they could spend with private contractors. They would not have to spend with the area education agencies. That Senate bill, again, passed on Monday. The House Republicans did not accept the Senate version of the bill. They had a 49-page amendment that dropped in the middle of the afternoon on Thursday, and they, within 3 hours, had already been passed. So the House amendment is quite a bit different from the governor's original proposal and what the Senate would do. It preserves a stronger role for the area education agencies in providing special education services. However, it would give school districts much more flexibility with what they do with services for funding for media or education services. That includes all kinds of things like professional development, gifted and talented, printing, and there are some special education aspects to those media services, for instance, technology assistive devices. So the House bill still would make significant changes, but not as far as what the governor wanted to do. I should add that the House bill that was passed on Thursday also includes provisions on raising teacher pay, raising paraeducator pay. Those are like the teaching assistants who are not a full-fledged classroom teachers. And finally, included 2.5% of school funding, an increase in state funding for K through 12 schools. So they rolled all of that into one bill that was passed on Thursday.
All right, the House passed it on a 51-43 vote with 9 Republicans joining Democrats in opposition. The Senate vote was 28-22 with some Republicans joining Democrats. So this is splitting Republicans apart, and it's splitting the chambers apart.
Yes, and they only had 51 votes in the House, so they really don't have a lot of room to spare. And in the Senate, it was highly unusual to see 6 Republicans vote against this. And I want to say that there was no clear regional or ideological split. The people who opposed this bill were all over the map, some representing more larger areas, larger counties, some rural areas. Some were among the most conservatives in the caucus. Some are considered slightly more moderate. So it really, there are a lot of people who are here. I can tell you that many legislators have told me they have received thousands of emails, phone calls from people. This is an issue that Iowans have weighed in on like no other. So I think that a lot of Republicans are listening to their constituents who overwhelmingly didn't want this bill to pass.
Is there any way to generalize about the school districts who want to reform the AEAs and those who do not? Do the bigger ones essentially want to control more of their money versus the smaller ones?
No, I would say the vast majority of stakeholders here, the superintendents who have been outspoken, most of them are opposed to major changes to the area education agencies. There are a few school districts, particularly in one region of the state, where apparently people aren't that happy with the AEA services that they're getting. But the fear is the AEAs work on an economy of scale. There are 9 that cover different regions of the state. And the fear is that if some school districts take their money and try to use it, maybe the larger school districts might hire some of their own staff to be school psychologists or some of the other roles, speech therapists, occupational therapists, the fear is that then there won't be enough of an economy of scale to provide the services that these smaller districts need. And it's very unpredictable for school districts. They never know, right? They don't know if they're going to have a blind student, a student who's hard of hearing, a student who needs an assistive device. And so the AEA can come in and provide those services right now. If it moves to a fee-for-service model, most of the superintendents are concerned that they wouldn't be able to support that going forward. There are some superintendents, however, who have spoken out in favor of changes.
All right, so this has been ping-ponging back and forth as we talk. Now the Senate has it, and they're limited, aren't they, in what they can do with the House bill?
Yes, this is what's called a bouncing bill, and I don't think we've ever talked about this before. This is originally a House bill passed in late February. The Senate amended it last week and went back to the House. The House amended it again. And so now the Senate, if they bring it to the floor, they can only vote it up or down. They cannot amend it any further because it is a bill that originated in the House. So they're either going to send it to the governor's desk or perhaps not vote on it. I have heard there was a lot of chatter over the weekend and today down at the Capitol that there were possibly some drafting errors in this House amendment. As I mentioned, it was brought to the floor very soon after it was published, and there were a lot of moving parts to it, and those can't be fixed in the Senate. So there are questions about whether the Senate may or may not take up the amendment, or if they pass it and send it to the governor, perhaps another bill will need to be passed later to fix whatever these errors may be. And I was not able to confirm any specifics about what errors might be in the bill.
If the Senate does pass the House bill, is the governor ready to sign it?
I think so. She issued a statement that was fairly supportive on Thursday night, but I do want to mention the Iowa governor has item veto power over appropriations bills or bills that contain an appropriation. And this bill, that latest House amendment, includes $14 million that's earmarked for salaries for paraeducators, paraprofessionals. So those are the assistants who particularly help students with disabilities in the classroom. And so the governor could item veto portions of this bill. Now, she did not say that she would do that, but in her statement was broadly supportive of it, but it definitely praised the AEA provisions, it praised the teacher pay provisions, but it was silent, the governor's office statement was silent about this $14 million for paraeducators. However, Speaker Pat Grassley in the Iowa House, after last Thursday's debate, I asked him, are you confident the governor won't item veto any portion of this bill? And he said the Senate and the governor's office know how important that funding is to our caucus. So we'll see. I think that she will sign the bill. I'm not 100% convinced that she would sign it with no item vetoes.
So if you're wondering why we're spending 7 minutes off the top of the show talking about something called the AEAs, the reason is very simple, Laura. It affects a lot of people.
It does. There are about 75,000 kids in Iowa who receive services through the AEA. And one thing that came out during the debate in the House last Thursday was that a lot of services that you might not traditionally think of as special education in schools come through the AEA. So for instance, birth to age 5 services, if families are concerned about a developmental delay with their child, they can get that child assessed through the AEA. Child care providers also can call in the AEA. They have behavior response teams who can help them manage a child with difficult behavior. So there's just a vast array of services, and that's partly why so many people, parents, grandparents, people who have been affected by the AEAs, have been contacting their legislators in just enormous numbers.
And to sum it up, we didn't even know, as you said months ago, that this was going to be an issue.
No, and it's a little bit confusing why Governor Reynolds decided that this was going to be one of her top priorities in the session. The first I heard that this might be on the agenda was in December when she told some media organizations that there was going to be a comprehensive review of AEAs. But then the plan that she dropped in January was a big surprise to almost everybody. And even the Republican legislators who were the chairs of the House and Senate Education Committees, they said in January that they didn't really get a heads up from the governor's office that this was in the works.
All right, we're going to cover this next week and as many weeks as we have to before we find a resolution, so stick right here to Capitol Week. There was, however, 10 minutes in on this, more action in the House, including today, Monday, as we go live Monday night. The House approved on a party line vote a child care bill involving teenagers.
Yeah, so Remember when we talked about the funnel, I said that sometimes if a bill didn't get through the funnel in one chamber, there might be an attempt to resurrect it. And that's what happened in the Iowa House today. So the House had approved a bill to allow 16 and 17 year olds to be unsupervised in charge of children under age five for short periods of time, short breaks or nap time. The Senate did not advance that through committee before the funnel. So what the House did today is they took a different bill related to childcare and they amended it with the language that they had already approved before. And it was almost a party line vote. There was one Republican who voted against it. But in any case, so we'll see if the Senate wants to move it now. This is the House telling the Senate, yes, we really want to pass this bill.
All right. Last week in the House, there was plenty of action. For one thing, the chamber passed an immigration bill on a 64-30 vote, and this one is going to the governor.
Yes, and I think I need to make a correction because I believe that last week I may have mentioned that this bill didn't get through the funnel, but in fact, this bill was on the unfinished business calendar from which it was pulled and debated and passed last week. So this one is, it's modeled on a Texas law. So it creates a new crime of illegal entry into the state of Iowa, which would be applied to somebody who had already been deported or denied entry to the United States, but found their way to Iowa. There are real questions about whether this bill is constitutional. And in fact, the Texas law that it's modeled after is now pending. There's litigation going on. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals is going to hear arguments on that. A lower district court judge had already basically invalidated or enjoined this law. So we'll see. Eventually, the U.S. Supreme Court is going to have to rule on this scheme. But normally, the federal government has jurisdiction over immigration, and state laws relating to immigration would normally be preempted. So it may well be that this never goes into effect. But Governor Reynolds is expected to sign this bill. I expect a lawsuit will be filed by one or more groups in Iowa to challenge it.
Another one of those fault lines in Iowa involves eminent domain and carbon capture pipelines. And a House committee, not the full House, a House committee last week approved a bill that would let people ask a court to decide whether a pipeline project deserves the power of eminent domain.
So this is very interesting because rather than the partisan divide, which we see on so many bills in the legislature, the eminent domain issue tends to bring out a divide between the House and the Senate. And this latest version of eminent domain, again, a strong bipartisan support. This was a unanimous vote on the House Ways and Means Committee last week, where the chair, Bobby Kaufman, has been outspoken about the eminent domain issue. All previous attempts to deal with this issue have gone to the Senate and gone absolutely nowhere because Senate Republican leadership has no interest in taking action. But this one is a little bit, is not as extensive as what the House approved last year. But the concept is that if your land was in the path of a pipeline, you could go to court before the Iowa Utilities Board decides whether to approve the project. You could go to court first, and the court would make the determination, is this really a public use, or is the for a public purpose, or is this a private use where eminent domain isn't appropriate? And what they're trying to do here is make sure that you don't have the pipelines being built while litigation is going on for years after the Iowa Utilities Board has made this determination. So again, bipartisan support in committee. I think the House will approve it. I have not seen any indication that the Senate is interested in doing anything about this, though.
Okay. The House moved forward last week, did not pass, but it advanced out of a subcommittee, a bill that would, what's involving traffic cameras. It would require cities and counties to apply to the state transportation department for permission to install them. Speed camera.
This has been a divisive issue. So there are a handful of legislators who have been really motivated to ban traffic cameras in the state of Iowa. And one of them is State Senator Brad Zahn. He got a ticket because one of his children was driving his car and got caught by that camera in Cedar Rapids. So there have been many efforts. Law enforcement generally opposes these bills. This is a new spin on it. And the law enforcement was much more supportive because it's not a blanket ban on traffic cameras, but the law enforcement would have to go and make a case to the Department of Transportation that, hey, there is a real safety reason. So for instance, the S-curve, if you've ever driven through Cedar Rapids on 380, that spur of I-80, there is an S-curve there that it is very hazardous. And apparently, according to law enforcement up in Lane County, crashes and injuries and fatalities are down significantly since they installed a speed camera there. So this would allow, it would probably scale back the number of cameras that are approved, but it would allow them in areas where law enforcement can make a case for them.
And the House also moved forward last week with the governor's behavioral health plan.
And so this one is a big reorganization of the way the state provides mental health services, substance abuse treatment, and other services. I think generally stakeholders are in this area are open to the idea of changes. The main concern I've heard about this bill is whether the timeline is realistic. These are really big questions and big systems. But I think the Iowa Department of Health and Human Services is saying that this is going to create efficiencies if they redo the regions and they better align these services.
And the House also moved forward with a police complaint process bill.
And this is one that it followed on. This was kind of a strange subcommittee because there were law enforcement people who spoke against this bill. There were aspects of it they didn't like. But the main purpose of the bill is it would add the university police, so the University of Iowa, Iowa State, UNI police, to parts of a 2021 bill that is informally known as the Back the Blue bill. So it would also make sure that you couldn't have policies that discourage law enforcement from enforcing laws. And I think that the impetus for this is some of the protests that happened after George Floyd was killed in 2020. There was some vandalism and destruction of property on the University of Iowa campus. And I think that's what they're trying to get at with this bill.
And before we move to the Senate, we also should say that the House moved some bills last week to the unfinished calendar.
Yeah, so there, again, I don't want to spend a lot of time going through, but there's just a lot of bills on different things. Both chambers moved things to unfinished business, and those leadership can pull those bills at any time if they need to for negotiations with the other chamber. So I expect we're going to see some of those come back to life in the next few weeks.
All right, it is 16 minutes and 20 seconds after the hour if you're listening to us live, and you are in tune with KHOI Radio's Capital Week, your front row seat for everything political going on in Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin, and we are now in our fourth year of being here in this time slot to talk about politics with an Iowa flavor. And now, we're excited to say this program is also available as a podcast. That's right. Just search for KHOI's Capital Week on your favorite platform, be it Apple, Google, Amazon, Spotify, and there we are again. It's KHOI's Capital Week. All right, let's talk about the Senate. Not what happened last week, not yet. Let's talk about what happened this Monday afternoon. It passed the House amended version of a bill involving stormwater and topsoil.
Oh, this is one of the many bills that the Republican leadership in the legislature has passed that limits local government authority. And this was a priority for State Senator Scott Webster of the Quad Cities area. He is a developer. That's his field. And this is something the developers wanted. So this would scale back what cities and counties can do to regulate topsoil and stormwater. There are a number of cities in Iowa that have ordinances, for instance, that require home builders to replace a certain amount of topsoil on the land, or they have stormwater requirements that are meant to mitigate flooding. And this bill was strongly opposed by a coalition that included environmental groups, engineering organizations, local governments, cities and counties, as individuals, water management authorities, who warned that this could create some real localized flooding problems. So the Senate had originally passed this bill last year, and the House took no action on it. But a few weeks ago, the House did pass this bill with an amendment that it changed its scope a little bit, but really the overall thrust of the bill is going to be the same, that local governments are going to be able to do much less in terms of stormwater and topsoil.
And that bill goes to the governor for her signature. Also, now let's talk about last week. The Senate passed on a 47-1 vote, not a lot of controversy here, a bill getting rid of the current formula used to allocate state funding for the community colleges.
Yeah, I watched this debate and I couldn't really get what was the impetus for this bill. But in any case, it wasn't that controversial. It would set up a system instead of the formula that's been used for some time. There would be a council of community college presidents and chancellors who would set this funding formula. Of course, community colleges are a very important part, not just of the education system, but workforce training.
E15, that's a big deal in Iowa, and it's going to get year-round sale next year. But a bill advanced in the Senate last week that would delay a requirement, now we don't want to be confusing here, until 2030 for gas stations to install those fuel dispensers that are compatible with the highest ethanol fuel blends.
Well, we discussed this bill in 2022. This was one that had bipartisan support. The biofuels industry really wanted this bill. It would promote E15, and as I remember, talking about on the show, that really most gas stations don't have dispensers for this, especially outside Iowa. But even within Iowa, there are a lot of gas stations that don't have it. So it was questionable how much this was actually going to change things. But in any case, as you say, this new bill now delays the requirement. I guess that some of the gas station owners probably don't want to spend the money that would be needed to upgrade the equipment. So this would delay it until 2030. And I mean, eventually, I think the demand for ethanol, it seems like the trend is pretty clear that the demand for ethanol is going to be lower in 2030 than it is right now.
And just to clarify, I even know this, E15 is 15% ethanol, 85% gasoline, and that's all I know about gasoline. All right. Bill on employment money. The Senate passed, Senate Appropriations Committee passed a bill that would require state jobless money to be used for workforce program funding.
Yeah, so there, I mean, workforce issues, there are a lot of bills that are kind of nibbling around the edges at the workforce shortage in Iowa. And this is one of them. So that it, I don't know that this is an extremely weighty bill, but this is something that I expect the full Senate to approve before long.
All right. And last week, the Senate Appropriations Committee approved a bill adding legal protections for pesticide makers.
Okay. So this one, we've talked about how the funnel, you know, nothing is really, really dead. This is a bill that was dead, right? It went through a committee. It did not get through the full Senate and through a House committee. The idea is that it would shield pesticide manufacturers from certain kinds of lawsuits, from people who would claim that their cancers or Parkinson's disease or other conditions were caused by use of the products. And this would be mainly people who would be filing these lawsuits would be the people who have direct contact with these products. So it didn't make it through the funnel. And one of the senators, Jeff Edler, he brought this through the Appropriations Committee. And at the subcommittee, the Democrat there said, I don't even know what this is doing in appropriations because this is not an appropriations bill. It's not a spending bill. It's a policy bill. But this is just an example of how you can get around the funnel if you want to. So this is controversial. A lot of groups, legal groups, are opposed to this bill. They say it would limit people's recourse in court. So not sure whether this is headed for the Senate floor. But in any case, this one came back from the dead.
That reminds me of one of my favorite William Faulkner quotes. In fact, the only one I can remember. He said, in referring to the South, he said, the past is never dead. It's not even past.
Yes, that's true.
All right. We had a number of Des Moines Register polls. In fact, it got to a point where I think we had them 95 days in a row, but we're finally done with them. Let's talk about some of them last week. There were a couple of interesting ones. There was a poll showing the state official who more Iowans think is performing their job well than anybody else. And who was it, Laura?
It was State Auditor Rob Sand. This was a very interesting poll. So the state auditor has traditionally been a very low profile role. And Rob Sand is, I think he was the first Iowa candidate for state auditor to run TV ads. Certainly he does many more media appearances than any of his predecessors. And this poll showed that 55% of Iowa adults approve of the job he's doing and only 15% disapprove. And what I thought was really stunning was that even among the Republican respondents in the poll, more approved of Sand's work than disapproved. Now, there were about a third of the respondents who didn't know enough about him to have an opinion, which doesn't surprise me, but I would think the previous state auditors probably, you know, 75% of Iowans probably didn't know enough about them to have an opinion.
Now, there were other state polls last week. We're going to get to them, but that same poll that showed Sand was popular showed Governor Reynolds has a 49% job approval rate.
Yeah, so Iowans are very split. Of course, 49% approve, 48% disapprove. And the change was really mainly from Republicans. And so it made me wonder whether there are a certain number of Trump supporters who were angry that she supported Florida Governor Ron DeSantis for president, because her approval rating with Democrats and independents didn't really change.
And there was another new poll about the U.S. Senators, Chuck Grassley and Joni Ernst.
Yeah, so again, a slight decrease in favorability and approval for both senators. And it does seem that that was mostly as a result of Republicans feeling less favorable toward Senators Grassley and Ernst. So it's still, it's fairly, for both of them, it's fairly split. They are slightly in higher favorable territory than unfavorable. But again, very, very noticeable partisan differences in this poll.
And there was another poll, and we've talked about this same poll for several years now, about likely voters in Iowa preferring a generic Republican or Democratic candidate in the congressional districts. I really wonder how valuable this one is.
Yeah, I disagree, and I know a lot of people in the election watching community disagree with the Register releasing these polls because the sample sizes for each of the four congressional districts are so small that the margin of error is really large, like plus or minus 7%. So when they say, do you prefer a Republican over a Democrat in each of these districts, and they're not naming the people who are the likely candidates, I don't think it is a very useful, frankly. But for what it's worth, it showed that respondents favored Republicans in three out of the four districts, the second, third, and fourth. And then in the first congressional district, a slight advantage for a generic Democrat.
So, Laura, you were not disagreeing with me. You were disagreeing with the poll.
Oh, correct. I just disagree. I mean, Ann Seltzer, who does the polls for the Des Moines Register, is one of the best pollsters in the business. But I think that to break up a statewide poll like this into four congressional districts, the sample sizes are just too small for it to be meaningful. And then to have a poll where you don't name the candidates, I don't think that gives you very much useful information.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that poll's almost useless. All right, one more poll. This one was about loan forgiveness for Iowans.
Yes. So,
Wait a minute, that's not a poll. That's actually a
no,
story.
that's a story.
Yes.
Yeah. So this is one. I mean, it's interesting because below the radar, the Biden administration continues to be rolling out more student debt loan relief, and Iowa's Republican politicians, from the governor to the attorney general, they've been very critical of this. To be clear, this is not the same debt relief that the US Supreme Court invalidated. This is the Biden administration using existing programs and processing. So, for instance, loans for in certain types of occupations, if you do certain types of public service occupations, or if you've been making payments for a certain number of years, you can eventually have the rest of your debt forgiven. And under the Trump administration, they really weren't processing a lot of this debt relief, even though this law was on the books. So the Biden administration continues to do that, and this latest round is going to affect an estimated 9,000 Iowans.
Okay, last week we had another federal government funding deadline. It finally passed at the last minute. Five of six Iowa lawmakers, the congressional members and senators, voted in favor of funding the U.S. government, keeping it open, but Randy Feenstra voted no. What was going on there?
Well, and he didn't explain his vote no, and this was brought to the floor in one of those unusual ways that requires a two-thirds vote. So there were actually more Democratic votes for this funding package than Republicans in the U.S. House. But again, Marionette Miller-Meeks, Ashley Hinson, and Zach Nunn voted to keep the government open. They had also voted several weeks earlier in March to on that other spending package to keep the government open. But Randy Feenstra, I looked through his social media. I read his email, weekly email newsletter that went out on Friday, and it just didn't explain why he voted against this funding bill.
All right, let's talk earmarks. This is pork basically for each congressional district. And guess who's not going to get any? It's Randy Feenstra.
That's right. So Randy Feenstra has declined to participate in the earmark process for the last 3 years. And so the 36 counties that are now part of his district are not getting any of this targeted funding. So in the spending bills, the way they do earmarks now, only at most 1% of the spending can be set aside for earmarks. And then members of the House and Senate can put in requests, and some of them are funded and some aren't. By the way, Senators Grassley and Ernst also don't participate in this earmark process. But I went through, and I have a post coming out soon about Marionette Miller-Meeks and Ashley Hinson and Zach Nunn. They all were able to get quite a bit of funding for their district. So for Marionette Miller-Meeks, it was about $28 million, a mix of road work, wastewater and sewer projects, $2 million for the Southeast Iowa Regional Airport, and $1.5 million for the University of Iowa's Physics and Astronomy Department. Ashley Hinson, she serves on the Appropriations Committee. She secured 28 $27.5 million. The biggest one was $8 million for a floodgate project in Dubuque, very important to that community there. $2.5 million for the Eastern Iowa Airport, and then again a mix of roads, water, childcare, medical facilities, and law enforcement. Zach Nunn was able to secure about $26 million. That included $4.8 million for the Appanoose County Community Railroad, $4 million for the Des Moines Airport improvements, and another, again, a mix of water, education, and healthcare and road projects.
Okay, we have 30 seconds left. You are going to be on the road this week, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I'm headed to Sioux City tomorrow, but I will be back in the legislature for Wednesday and Thursday to watch whatever they're debating.
All right. Well, thank you very much again for being in the legislature again today and keeping us up on AEAs. And we're going to expect it again next Monday night. How's that?
Absolutely. It will probably be our top story.
Probably so, at least on this broadcast, perhaps not others, though. Okay, we know what we're talking about. That's it. We are out of time. That's an inside joke. I shouldn't have done that. You've been listening to Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio with me, Dennis Hart, and Laura Bell. And a reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. What was I talking about? Laura and I will be back here next week at the same time. We'll be talking about everything interesting, important, or entertaining about politics, Iowa style. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We truly appreciate it. We truly value it. Between now and then, let's all go ahead. Come on. Have a safe, healthy, and happy week.